is business as usual the safest path for Florida? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, Florida says it's staying open no matter what. Even though a new White House report says the state's restaurants, bars, and gyms should close again. Give us a call with your thoughts. It's 549-2937. Then later, one safe activity you can do right now is get outside. Even do some trail riding on horseback. That's in our wild Florida. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. After yesterday's positive new case count of 8,408, Florida now stands at 1,676,171 cumulative cases of COVID. The positivity rate increased by another percentage point. It's at 13.78% in St. Johns County, the highest in the region. And the state's health department has recorded 25,833 resident deaths from COVID-19. Now, Florida bars, indoor dining, gyms, and any other indoor spaces where masks are not worn 100% of the time should be closed down to stop the spread of COVID-19. That, the recommendation of a new White House Coronavirus Task Force report published January 17th. Florida is still categorized as a red zone for COVID-19 cases, the report says, meaning there is a high rate of community spread. But state officials say shutting businesses down again is not on the table. Tim Gibbons is editor-in-chief of the Jacksonville Business Journal, and he's on the line now as we talk about this. Hi, Tim. Always good to hear your voice.
You too. How are you doing today?
Great, thanks. Let us know your thoughts, everyone, as the White House Coronavirus Task Force report says the state's restaurants, bars, and gyms are not safe and should be shut down since they don't universally enforce mask wearing. What do you think about this? Give us a call, 549-2937. You know, Tim, this report is published just as the new Margaritaville resort is opening at Jack's Beach. Certainly, Florida officials are putting cold water on this report. They're saying that the state cannot economically afford to go into any other shutdown of any other kind. And so let's begin with that argument. They're making the economic argument that this cannot be done, but at the same time, the community transmission rate is high, particularly in these kinds of businesses.
Right. I mean, Duval County is at an extremely high risk level. And I think there's a couple different strands of this. I mean, yeah, this is the argument we've been having, honestly, for you know, almost a year now, of how do we as a society deal with this? And the reality, of course, as you said, is the state isn't going to shut down. I don't even know if it's accurate to say shut down again, really, when you think about it, with the number of loopholes and the amount of businesses that stayed open. It's not like we went through the full shutdown at a place like Germany or Italy or somewhere like that, truly, truly, you know, cramped things down. But even the limitations that were put in, the 50% capacity and bars that were actually shut down, we're not going back to that. There's not the political appetite to have that happen.
Right. The state representative who chairs the committee on pandemics says, look, we're just not going to do this. Social distancing, wearing a mask, and washing hands are important, he said. His name is State Rep Tom Leake of Ormond Beach, but no shutdowns. But you know, Tim, the problem with that is too many Floridians are not wearing their masks or social distancing, particularly in places like restaurants and bars and also gyms. And not to knock gyms, they do everything they can to keep their facilities sanitary. But these are the places.
Many of them do, yes.
Many of them do.
But not all of them.
Not all of them. But these are the places where the virus is being spread the most.
The interesting thing from this, from a at least semi-political standpoint, is the idea of personal responsibility, which used to be, you know, a mantra that some people would talk about. In some ways, the reason why a recommendation to shut down the businesses would go into effect is because people aren't doing the things that, frankly, they're being told based on the science to do. So the idea of you can have a gym that would be much safer if everybody's wearing a mask. There are still some people who would not feel safe enough to go even with that. But if you go to a gym, I walked by a restaurant last night and you know there are plenty of people sitting around not eating but not wearing masks. And that is the type of thing that spreads the disease. You know, it's the old, you know, if you want ants, this is how you get ants. You know, if you want a shutdown, you get it from people not taking the precautions that would stop the spread of the disease and thereby not require a shutdown. We talk to business owners, and one of the most challenging things that they deal with is having to fight with customers who come in and, you know, they don't want to wear a mask, they want to congregate. And it's a hard thing to put on a poor beleaguered business owner to try to enforce this regulation that in Duval County is a regulation. You're required to wear a mask inside.
Mayor Lenny Curry extended that mask mandate for Duval County. Surrounding counties don't have it. And by the way, we're getting so many tweets about this. What do you think about the White House Coronavirus Task Force report, the recommendation that Florida needs to take more aggressive action to prevent an increase in hospitalizations for COVID-19? The report says if restaurants, bars, and gyms aren't enforcing mask wearing 100% of the time, they should close again. It's 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts on this. This report is released, by the way, Tim, just as the state's chief financial officer sent a letter to try to get the Olympics here in Florida because he's saying our state is open for business. You know, and how about this? The median age of coronavirus infection in Duval County is 38. In St. Johns County, it's 41. Not senior citizens.
No,
Clay County, it's 44.
I think that people's mindset of, you know, if you go back to April, May, where it was in assisted living facilities and was in nursing homes, and it was also out in the community as well, obviously, but there's this kind of snapshot frozen in our minds that, this is older people who are getting sick and who are dying from it, versus the reality that it is throughout the community and it is younger people. You know, I personally know people who are below the age of 50 who've gotten it and have had extremely harrowing experiences in fighting it. And I think that reality is kind of the thing that is separating people who are wearing masks and are socially distancing and are basically looking forward to the summer when hopefully there's enough vaccinations that we can get back to something like normal. But just trying to plow through it is going to have the outcome of overburdened hospitals and the same type of stressed system that we saw when this first hit.
All right. Let us know your thoughts about the new White House Coronavirus Task Force report saying that Florida should shut down restaurants, gyms, and bars again. The state has no intention of doing this, as we know. 549-2937. Give us a call. Erica is in Arlington. Hi, Erica. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just making the comment about it relying heavily on employees having to say something to customers. Like, we took on a job we had no idea. We were not prepared for basically becoming bouncers, more or less. We're dealing with hostility. I've had people kick signs, slam their fists on our host stand, call us and, you know, yell at us, say F you over the phone.
Wow.
Because we're asking them to wear masks. So, you know, it's as overt as those types of hostile things, and then it's like, it's the other, you know, rolling your eyes, making the comment that it doesn't matter. You know, it's belittling. It's constant. So it's definitely, the job has taken a toll beyond, like, us worrying about having to get COVID. It's definitely seeing the people that we think are our neighbors, our community members, and not caring at all. So we definitely wish we would have been able to have a government take care of us and not force us to go to work is, I think, a wide consensus among at least my coworkers.
Yeah. Erica, I am so sorry. I am just so sorry that you have to deal with this. It really is just so outrageous. I'm so sorry.
It is what it is. It's now, you know, 9 months into it, and we're still dealing with it. We we have, like, six signs, you know, throughout the restaurant before you even come in saying to put a mask on, and people act surprised that we require a mask. And it's because a lot of restaurants are not enforcing it, so there is definitely not a collective effort, in my opinion. So we do have lovely regulars and not regulars, lovely people that come in and they express their appreciation of what the effort that we're putting in. We've had to kick people out of the restaurant. It's just a shock. Every time it's a shock. So there is a great emotional toll that it's taken.
I'm sure there is. Erica, thanks for that. So Tim, this gives you an idea, as you said, of what a business owner is up against when they try to be responsible.
I am so glad Erica called in. I've been so very sorry for her. I mean, that type of environment is, it's so hard on the business owners, it's so hard on the employees. And the irony is the people oftentimes who are fighting the most against the rules are the ones who want these places to stay open, who understand that it's not good if we shut everything down. And the idea of if we can take some basic steps, if we can do the things that will allow these places to stay open, it's better for the economy, it's better for the workers, it's better for everybody that you can get out of the house and go and, you know, get a to-go cocktail. Berating and fighting with the people at these businesses, it's just a bad outcome all around. I mean, one of the things that the caller just kind of referenced, and this is the difference between here and other countries, most of these places have to stay open. I mean, these people have mortgages or leases to pay. They have employees who have, you know, need paychecks. They want to stay open, but they want to do it in a safe way.
A statewide mask mandate that actually had teeth, would that have made a difference if that had been done early on, Tim?
I mean, scientifically, it sounds like it would have, but you know, you're you know, well plugged into the political scene and the idea of you know, I'm sure you're thinking of people you've interviewed and their response if you broach the idea of actually mandating masks. You know, I think it's interesting that in Duval County, we've actually had, as you said, the extended mask mandate. It's not particularly enforced. None of the regulations in Florida, outside of some in South Florida, have been particularly well enforced over the past 9 months, but it is a sign of the seriousness with which it's being taken that in a place like Duval County, the city government would believe it appropriate to you know, put this out there, to give businesses, frankly, some amount of cover that it's not them saying you need to wear a mask, it's the government saying it. I think that's somewhat helpful.
George is in St. John's County. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that if people want to be, we need to be healthy no matter what places we go, not infect anybody. The more people respect the mask and all that, they're going to be better for the economy. Because if you infect somebody and then because you went to a restaurant and you didn't do the mask, that person is going to lose income, going to get sick, and vice versa, you know. So companies, everybody should be wearing a mask. Everybody should be not gathering. And if we need to be get the people healthy first, money second.
That's right, George. Thank you for that. And lots of comments, Tim, on both Facebook and Twitter. Here is a comment on our Facebook page from Brittany. Maybe 1 in 3 people are wearing masks in the Middleburg area. And if you have one on, they look at you like you're the problem. She says this is dragging the whole country down because these people, she says, are selfish.
Oddly enough, in Middleburg, and I know exactly that feeling that she's describing. The idea of you walk into a place and you're wearing a mask, and I've had friends who've had people yell at them, you know, don't be a sheep, take the mask off, which I personally just find baffling. Of even if you don't have the sense of society to wear a mask yourself, it's very strange to me that you would want to argue with somebody who is wearing a mask. But political environment we're in, if nothing else, I guess, that there are people who are treating not wearing a mask as some sort of badge of honor or symbol of something, as opposed to, you know, just not showing the appropriate care for you know, society. It will be interesting as the vaccination rates increase It is important to continue wearing masks even after you're vaccinated. Obviously, science is a little bit unsure on transmission, even if you don't have, you know, symptoms. But, yeah.
That's right. Lots of calls as we speak with Tim Gibbons of the Business Journal about the White House Coronavirus Task Force report that came out last week recommending that Florida should shut down once again restaurants, gyms, and bars that aren't enforcing mask wearing. Lots of opinions on that. Jesse is in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Jesse. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So I just wanted to comment on, I feel like the easiest solution for this would be for Governor Ron DeSantis to just enforce a statewide mask mandate. I was in North Carolina for the holidays, and I know Governor Roy Cooper has a mask mandate there. And it's a lot easier for small businesses to just put a sign on the door saying, you know, due to the mask mandate put in place by Governor Ward Cooper, you have to have a mask. So it kind of puts it on the state government as opposed to the small business to do the policing. I applaud Mayor Curry for enforcing or extending the mask mandate here in Duval because I noticed a big difference. I do Instacart shopping all over the Jacksonville area, and a lot less people wear masks in St. John's in comparison to Duval. So I think it just makes it easier if you extend the mask mandate to every county in the state. That way we don't have to see a shutdown and businesses can operate responsibly.
Thank you, Jesse. Yes, we hear about this a lot. So many people tweeting the show. Here are just a few for you, everybody. Leadership should have at least modeled mask wearing from day one. It's been a total failure. Another tweet, my kid is missing out on so much because our state won't get COVID under control. We feel trapped living here. Another tweet, having a state response that follows federal government direction makes sense. Too many have died from the leave it to the states approach, but many are still doing the anti-mask approach. I'm outraged, says another listener. Our governor is in total denial about the risks and the danger they pose. We have 25,832 deaths, many of which could have been prevented with a simple measure such as face coverings. And a bit of pushback, though, Tim Gibbons, from some that are commenting on social media. One listener pointing out California has had a lot of deaths and that they've had even more stringent recommendations. What about that? Of course, California has twice as many people as Florida. But what about that? What about that argument?
Well, I mean, you'd have to dig into, and I don't cover California, so I haven't, but you also have to look at, frankly, a mask mandate doesn't do a lot, mask wearing does. As one of your earlier callers said, the idea of a mask mandate is it gives the small business owners ammunition and a leg to stand on. It's not just them arguing. You know, they can do the old, yeah, I don't like it either, but hey, it's policy. How many times in life does somebody say, hey, it's policy, and somehow we just, you know, let it happen. It's policy. You can't argue with policy. And I think that is what a mask mandate would give. But the mandate by itself doesn't provide the protection. It's people actually adhering to it. And looking at California, I have no idea if the compliance rates are where they should be.
Yeah. And in the absence of a uniform policy, people have really taken it upon themselves, Tim, to take their own individual actions to protect themselves. Some people will cross the county line, for example, from St. John's County into Duval County to go into a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
People are avoiding restaurants with indoor dining because of the lack of wearing masks. People are avoiding gyms and bars and places where they think they might stand a higher chance of getting the disease. People are making individual decisions. And how do you see that affecting business owners in this state over time? Because this is being driven essentially by the market and people trying to protect their health by making these business individual purchasing decisions.
Right. I think that's something that people don't realize. I find it vaguely aggravating when people talk about, you know, we can't do another shutdown or we can't go back into quarantine when, at least in Florida, at least in North Florida, we've not had much in the way of draconian shuttering of businesses. There were bars that were shut down, you know, gyms were shut down for a brief period of time, and I feel for those business owners who really struggled due to that. But a lot of the economic impacts on businesses are because of those choices that people are making. And some of those choices are because of the choices other people are making. If I walk by a restaurant and I see, you know, nobody who's working there is wearing a mask, or they're wearing the mask and it's over their chin, that might make me less likely to patronize the restaurant.
Yeah.
Not because of anything the government's doing, but because it makes me feel less safe.
Right, right. Vicki is in St. Augustine. Hi, Vicki. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Melissa. Good morning. I was on I live in St. Augustine, a local St. Augustine Facebook group the other night, and somebody posted the question of, how do you feel about going into an establishment that does not have a mask mandate for their staff? And out of roughly 100 comments, about 5 people said that they would not go into a business where the staff was not wearing a mask. Not only did 95% of people support businesses that do not have mask mandates, but they said they will only go to businesses that do not have mask mandates. I think it comes down to a political issue at this point. So many people link it to their personal freedom and their political views, as I stated. And at this point, I mean, I think we all know what's right and we all know what's accurate. And it's kind of comical that we're here 9 months later and we're still dealing with this issue of people thinking that it comes down to their personal right to wear a mask or not when so many people are still sick every day.
Yeah. Vicki, thank you. Tim, it really is absolutely the truth that mask wearing has become politicized, and it shouldn't be. It's simply, it's medical common sense that people of all political persuasions should follow. It's about saving lives. It's public health. But unfortunately, she's right. Yeah. This has become a political wedge.
I was talking about mask mandates months ago with somebody from another country who was just kind of baffled at the American view of this is somehow a stand that you're going to take, and she said something to the effect of, I mean, it would be like arguing about wearing seatbelts. And I laughed because I remember when seatbelts laws were put into effect, and it was the exact same argument of, you know, don't take away my freedom. And obviously that, you know, it's a cherished American tradition of we stand for freedom. I think that what people find back, people who understand the science and believe that people should take care of society, find a little baffling is wearing a mask isn't taking away your freedom. It's basically protecting all of our freedoms by, you know, protecting public safety and by letting us get through this.
John in Middleburg. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Good
from
morning.
Down in Middleburg.
How are you doing today?
Okay.
I hope everybody's well and safe.
You too.
My comment is my wife and I tried to go out a couple times to have dinner. Now, can I mention the name of the restaurants, or would you rather I not?
You know what? It's up to you. I won't force you to do that. But just go ahead and tell us, if you could, your experience.
Well, the one restaurant we went to is a popular one in Orange Park. And we were sitting there, and some people were sitting there with their kids at the table, and they were not wearing masks. And one of the staff walked up and asked them to wear a mask. And they said if they didn't, they would have to leave. Now, this place had signs up that said masks required to come in there. And the guy literally got belligerent, stood up, put his arm on the table, and knocked everything off the table and said, how dare you tell me to do that? And they stormed out. And it kind of ruined the feeling in that night in the restaurant. And we went out a couple weeks later to another one that was just opening. And it has a bar in it. We were watching people at the bar, no masks on. Some of them were wearing the masks under the nose. Some of them were wearing, like, chin straps, drinking at the bar. There were people sitting at the tables thinking that if they kept their menu in front of their face, that would suffice. But the kicker was when they opened up the sliding door to the kitchen, none of the kitchen staff were wearing masks at all.
Yeah.
And my wife, I was trying to get – she's pent up because she's predisposed – because she's on a drug that actually reduces your immune system for a debilitating problem she has. And I try to take care of her best I can. But we just got up and left. We could not stay, and we just decided after that my wife is going online, looking at your menus that you have on some of your JCT sites on there and everything, and we're doing a lot of cooking at home now. We decided with this, we just do not want to go out and take a chance.
I don't blame you, John, and I'm so sorry that happened, and I really appreciate the call. That's John in Middleburg. And you know what, John? I'm right there with you. In our household, we have been doing nothing but takeout and drive-thrus for most of a year, since early mid-March. You know, I've met a couple of friends for lunch, Tim, at a restaurant that has outdoor seating, and that's it. Other than that, I don't go in. I don't eat inside restaurants. I don't go into bars. And I've been paying my gym membership all this time, but I haven't gone in there because I know that could increase my risk of getting the virus. Let me just say this once again. Most of the state is in the red zone, the highest rate of transmission that they measure. And according to the White House Coronavirus Task Force report, restaurants, bars, and gyms should be shut down until there is more of a decrease in hospitalizations, because mask wearing is not being enforced. And that is, people are crammed into close quarters, and that is how the virus is continuing to spread. And so, Tim, what are your final thoughts about this?
I'm encouraging people to do these things that will keep us all safe, and to not berate the poor business owners who are trying to do the same. You know, hopefully we can all get through this in just a few more months, and everyone doing their part to help us get through it, and letting businesses do what they need to do will help us do it in good order.
I hope so. And it is so gratifying to see more vaccinations finally rolling out. Mayor Curry, by the way, just a few minutes ago announced that people that receive the first dose of their vaccine at a city-managed site, either Lane Wiley or Mandarin Senior Centers, will be getting their second dose very soon. Hopefully grocery workers, teachers, and other people on the front lines can soon get vaccinated as well. But thank you so much, Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Thanks for being with us.
You have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Well, much more coming up later. Wild Florida returns with master naturalist Lisa Gruba. How you can get outside safely this spring, maybe even get on the back of a horse. But up next...
Registration websites have crashed, getting appointments have been a matter of luck, and it is heartbreaking to see images of older folks over 70 camped in lawn chairs for hours in our state waiting to get vaccinated.
How should the state improve its rollout of the vaccination program? Our contributor Hugh Green has his take. We'll be right back. It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9. Welcome back. Well, Florida seniors are receiving vaccinations for coronavirus, but in the beginning, the troubled efforts to vaccinate this big population and others at risk has come under criticism. How can things be improved? Well, with his thoughts on the rollout, here's our contributor, Hugh Green.
All of us are now focused on the COVID-19 vaccination effort, which is certainly one of the most challenging public health efforts in our lifetime. From the outset, let us acknowledge that the very existence of the vaccine is a tribute to the scientists and the pharmaceutical industry for the rapid development and production of the vaccine. But unlike the development of the vaccine, the actual vaccination distribution has been sluggish and fallen behind. It is stunning that there was no comprehensive vaccination plan for our nation. I want to begin by commending those who've worked so hard in getting the vaccination into the arms of our local population. The local health department and health systems have done a remarkable job given the absence of a comprehensive plan and the shortage of resources. Despite being decimated by funding cuts, the Duval County Health Department has been able to give vaccines across our county. The mayor has provided focus and been instrumental in setting up non-appointment sites. I also have been impressed by our health systems. UF Health has done a great job and has played a major role as a receiving facility and hub for the vaccines. Baptist Health, where I served for years, has sought to allocate vaccinations in an equitable way to serve the diverse population across our county. You could see African-American church vans on the north from the north side pulling up at Baptist South, for example, where folks had been provided appointments. But there is a but. As of this week, only 10.6 million persons in our country have received one shot, and that represents just a little over 3% of the population. That is woefully short of the goal of 20 million doses that was set by the end of 2020. Registration websites have crashed. Getting an appointment has been a matter of luck, and it is heartbreaking to see images of older folks over 70 camped in lawn chairs for hours in our state waiting to get vaccinated. Frankly, it is unrealistic to assume that healthcare systems and their workers can conduct this massive vaccination program. They are already overburdened with caring for those with COVID. Their staffs are exhausted. And while retail drug chains and grocery stores can have a positive effect, they also do not have the excess personnel to inoculate millions of Americans. It has been inexcusable that the federal government did not lay out a plan before now. So what has taken place has been disjointed and inconsistent in our country and across Florida. Several states have smartly deployed the National Guard to assist. After all, this is a national emergency, and there is expertise in doing logistics on a large scale. Arizona has facilitated the largest mobilization of the National Guard since World War II. States like Maryland have created pop-up sites with the help of the National Guard to offer more locations. All of this makes sense to me. I only wonder why others are not approaching this with the same urgency, creativity, and use of resources as these governors have done. I am not prepared, nor do I have the expertise to offer the solution. But it is apparent that the vaccination effort is just not working as it could and should. We can do better. Leaders must acknowledge reality and develop a comprehensive distribution plan. Hopefully that will now occur with the incoming administration as a plan is being set forth. Lives are at stake. But in the meantime, let us all express gratitude for those in our local community who are working hard to get the vaccination to us.
BritBox and PBS Passport are now offering the best of all your favorite British drama, comedy, and more when you sign up at jacksbundle.com. Start watching today.
In that COVID relief package last month was something called the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant. Clunky name, I grant you, but could be big.
I think it will allow us to take another deep breath and get through the next several months.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, an indie movie theater on getting through in this pandemic. Next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Well, one activity we can all safely engage in right now is just to get outside and enjoy a beautiful time of year in Florida, and that includes getting on the back of a horse. Lisa Gruba is an environmental journalist and Florida master naturalist, and she's on the phone to tell us what's going on outdoors. Giddy up. It's today's Wild Florida. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning, Melissa.
It's so good to hear your voice. So what's going on across the great outdoors this month?
Well, these temperate days that we're having are a great time to get out and see Wild Florida by horseback. And so today I'm going to talk about three places in Northeast Florida that you can go to trail ride, and each offers a different view of outdoor Florida. One, you'll see an upland forest. One, you'll see a maritime forest. and you'll also see the beach and the ocean. So starting out in the western part of Duval County, near the Duval-Clay County line, there are many old family ranches out that way. And Diamond D is a 500-acre working horse cattle ranch, and they offer trail rides. You can go on a one-hour ride that tours the ranch, or you can go on a two- or three-hour ride that goes south into Jennings State Forest. Jennings State Forest is in Clay County and is 24,000 acres and is known for having many different biological communities. But what you're likely to see riding with Diamond D is a lot of old-growth trees, live oaks, longleaf pines, native magnolias. You'll see hawks, possibly bobwhite. This time of year, there are a lot of wintering migratory birds. As we've talked about before, Florida's East Coast is on the Atlantic Flyway, which is basically the highway for the real snowbirds, the birds that migrate between the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere. So there are a lot of wintering birds around this time of year. And there's a great site that you can look at that I'll provide a link to called eBird, where citizens can record the birds that they've seen in a particular location. And the Jennings Forest location shows so far 121 species have been recorded by regular citizens. You might also see deer, turkey. I've seen wild boar track. I haven't seen wild boar.
Hmm.
I've seen fresh bear track. I saw fresh bear track last time I was there.
Oh, wow. How fun. Do you already have to know how to ride for any of these?
No, you don't. The horses in all three of these places are well-trained for trail riding. The horses that I grew up on tended to be a little more skittish if we were near cars or near a highway. When I was out at Diamond D last month, we had a utility truck, a big bucket truck, come by us, and he went slow as he passed our group, but, you know, it rattled and made a ton of noise, and it didn't faze the horses at all. When you look at all of the reviews of all three of these places, no one has mentioned any trouble with the horses, and typically, you know, they're very used to dealing with beginners. So another place that I want to tell you about is called Kelly Seahorse Ranch on Amelia Island. So they're actually in Amelia Island State Park. So if you are going to Amelia Island, if you're coming out of Jacksonville and going along Heckscher, which is the most scenic route, as you cross Nassau Sound, the landmass you see on the right, those white sugar sand beaches and that forested area, that is Amelia Island State Park, and it's 240 acres of virgin maritime forest, meaning it has never, ever been developed.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that has ever been built in there is the small stables that are operated by Jim and Kelly Kelly, and they operate really only one of two ranches in the country that are located on the beach, and they operate in conjunction with the Park Service. So when they built their property and their trails, they mapped it out with using GPS to avoid all of the most important trees and you know, species growing there. So a maritime forest is an evergreen hardwood forest, and Kelly tells me you can see slash pine, cedars, live oak, swamp oak. They see turtles, gopher tortoise. There are coyotes and deer out there, but they don't tend to see those during the day when they're leading their trail rides. And by the way, Kelly Seahorse Ranch is the official outfitter for Ritz-Carlton Hotel and the Omni Hotel. That's where they send their guests.
Right. Okay.
So, and what's really neat is you start out in the middle of the forest, and you go for about a 5 or 7 minute walk through the forest on your horse. So it's very quiet, very peaceful, up over the dunes and out onto the beach. And so then you get a beach ride. Now, coming up, we'll have nesting shorebirds, and I know a lot of our listeners are very into the shorebirds. The Kellys do work very closely with the Park Service to make sure they know what is nesting and where, so they're not disturbing, you know, any of those species. But that's another thing that you can see while you're out there is the migrating birds and migrating butterflies. And then the other one that's out that way is Amelia Island horseback riding. It's an established outfitter that was recently bought out by Robin Allen, who was the manager for 4 years of the group. And they operate a little bit differently. They do go out during the day on the beach, but they also do sunrise and sunset tours. And for experienced riders, they will allow you to trot and canter on the beach. So you can see all of that information on their website. Their website is still being updated because they were just bought out January 1st. But if you click on the section that says bookings, it's very that link works, and it's very clear what the hours are depending on when sunrise and sunset is. And it's very easy to book from there. And so if you're out on the beach, the one thing you also really want to keep in mind is that North Atlantic right whales are wintering off of our coast this time of year. They're here usually December through about April, and there have been a lot of sightings this year.
Oh, really?
Yes, absolutely. So it's been really good news because they are a critically endangered species. And so there have been a lot of sightings. If you do see them, call in the location to the Marine Resources Council hotline at 888-97-WHALE, because they then report it to shipping companies and other boaters in the area so they can avoid the whale.
Oh, that's good to know. 888-97-WHALE. So some romantic horseback riding, that might be a fun Valentine's Day date.
Absolutely. But you remember to book early because they do fill up for Valentine's Day.
All right.
So there's two other
events. You have more? Oh, there's even more.
Yeah.
What else? What else you got?
Saturday, February 6th is Family Farm Day at Diamond D Ranch. So that might be something fun to take the kids out to. You can check out information on their website. And don't forget about tonight's ADAPT event. ADAPT is WJCT's digital magazine covering sustainability issues in Northeast Florida. And they have a virtual panel discussion tonight covering what we might expect from a new administration in terms of changes in policy.
Check that out, everybody.
So you can register online. Yep.
Yeah, adaptflorida.org.
So did I convince you? Are you going to go horseback riding?
I don't know. I might have to do that. It sounds like fun, especially on the beach. I mean, what could be more beautiful than that? Lisa Vick Gruba, our Wild Florida expert. She is a Florida master naturalist and a WJCT contributor. And your segment is so popular. I'm so glad you're back with us. Enjoy the great outdoors. And thank you, Lisa. We'll talk to you next month.
Thank you very much. Good to talk to you.
In a moment, a conversation with New York artist Stacy Cushman as she sets up shop here on the First Coast. How you can enjoy her open house this weekend and even learn how to throw some pottery. That's after this.
Brendan Rivers. Join ADAPT this month as we talk about what a new Congress and presidential administration could mean for climate policy in Northeast Florida. On Thursday, January 28th at 7 p.m., I'll host a virtual discussion with experts who are working to slow climate change and protect the people who are most vulnerable to it. Reserve your free space now at wjct.org/events.
Now, Next time on The World, COVID-19 raises a big question for the Tokyo Olympic Games. Should athletes get their vaccinations before the rest of us? This three-time Paralympian sees a dilemma.
Well, if it was between yourself and an elderly relative, then who would you rather get the vaccine? It's quite a difficult one to answer.
Vaccine ethics and the Tokyo Olympics. It's on The World.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Settling in for a long year of quarantine meant a revelation for millions of Americans. We miss having friends. Boston Globe staff writer Billy Baker joins us to talk about his realization that at 40, his full life was missing a cadre of close buddies and how that led to his quest to rebuild those intimate connections outside work and family. That's next time on Think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
The Republican Party has been redefined by a president who's now out of power. Some believe it's time to turn their backs on members who peddle conspiracy theories. Others are doubling down and see this as the moment to finally smash the GOP. A party realigned or a party at war? I'm Jen White. What's next for Republicans? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Artist Stacey Cushman is nationally renowned for her three-dimensional ceramic work, and she's opening up a new studio in our area where you can view her gorgeous installations and even learn how to do some of this stuff yourself. You can come on out to her open house this weekend, and I got a preview. I spoke with her. Take a listen. Hi, Stacey. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hello. Nice to be with you as well.
Your work is so well regarded and has drawn international acclaim. It's exciting that people here on the First Coast can come to this open house event at your new studio in Ponte Vedra. What drew you to Ponte Vedra? Do you split your time between here and New York?
Well, originally I was splitting my time between New York and here. I had lived on a sailboat with my parents for 20 years, and at the end of their life, they ended down here because they wanted to be near the ocean, and it was so beautiful, and it was as much a place to be a part of nature in the same way as we did on the boat. So we kind of continued to work here, you know, within the, let's say, within the sort of like confines of this beautiful environment where we could, you know, explore in the same way we did when we lived such a free life. Mm-hmm. And the people were so wonderful, and we were welcomed here, and it was just like a plethora of beauty, and it was certainly a spark for my imagination. And I eventually decided that I would leave New York because it was a little bit too much of a crazy life for me to be able to be truly creative. Mm. So I moved down here, and I've now opened my door up to all of the people around me who seem to have the need to, you know, have somewhere to be creative and to explore their own ideas.
Well, your work,
and that's kind of where I am now.
Where you are now. Your work is stunning, and I do hope that you, living and working near the ocean, keeps sparking your creativity. These are beautiful three-dimensional installations, and you often use the wall as your canvas. Why is that?
Well, I would say because I've always loved painting, and I've spent a good part of my life going through museums and spaces where I've been allowed to sort of see into other people's imaginations. But I kind of like the idea of our whole life as being a canvas. And so in using the wall, I was able to sort of create forms and shapes rather than just flat images that could sort of in one way remind people of all the different levels within our lives and all the sort of places that we go, but also to sort of remind us of the way like cliffs look or like reefs underwater and sort of the natural landscapes that we sort of lose when we come indoors. So with making 3D sort of installations in spaces that I'm invited into either as a commission or in just through my own imagination, seeing space and wanting to change it, I've kind of brought in people's awareness of the 3D world in a more sort of sensual way. In a more, that's the right word. I'm not sure if stressful might be my word.
No, right, right. And so at this event Saturday night at your new studio, people will be distanced and masked, but they will get to appreciate your work, and they'll be able to make something of their own, too. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. Well, I have a beautiful outdoor space as well as an indoor space, so I can sort of monitor the amount of people that are allowed to circulate with indoors and have refreshments and things outside. And yes, I allow people to come in and to experiment with clay and paint. And in some cases already on the three times that I've had this event going, I've already have young artists coming in who want to re-experience and try things on a deeper level, which is what I am here to do, which is to give people the experience of creativity that they might not even be aware that they are drawn to until they experience it firsthand. And I know from my own experiences, unless I'm shown or introduced to some sort of new medium, I'm not necessarily going to seek out to find it. So this is just sort of like a little treasure trove of experiential art.
This will be an amazing,
I include the other arts as well, because I have DJs and I have had some musicians, and then coming up this next time, I'll have another form of art also in, as well as the clay and the paint.
This is going to be an amazing event. People need to RSVP now for the opening of Stacy Cushman's Ponte Vedra Studio this Saturday night, and actually the first Saturday of every month, 5 to 9 p.m. with DJ Amy Tran. Email her to RSVP Stacy at StacyCushman.com. The Stacy... What is wrong with me today?
I'm sorry.
The Stacy Cushman Studio Gallery at 820 A1A North in Ponte Vedra Beach, adding so much luster to our artistic community. Stacy Cushman, kudos to you, and I'm sure it's going to be wonderful.
Okay, thank you so much.
Get out and check that out, everybody, but please wear your mask. Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. She's the one who booked that Stacy Cushman segment, being a former New Yorker. Josh Torres is our show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep that feedback coming. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed any part of today's show, listen to our podcast up later today, wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Or you can always listen through the WJCT app. Download it today. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.